Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, no, it's the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
On Pilot TV this week, we are going behind the scenes of Hollywood in the studio on Apple TV+, seeing how video games shape lives in Mythic Quest anthology spin-off SideQuest, also on Apple TV+, and we're learning how to run a drug empire from Sean Bean. Not on Apple TV+, but on BBC One instead. Plus, Seth Rogen and the legendary Catherine O'Hara join us on the show to chat, yes, you guessed it, Apple TV+, specifically the studio. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters. And a podcast that, inspired by the studio, is seriously considering pitching a new series to Apple just called The Podcast. So, and Kay and Boyd, who are, of course, with me here today, and you will feature in this, and you'll have pivotal roles. And it will basically follow the sort of trials and tribulations of a group of podcasters dealing with technical difficulties, corporate overbearance, the occasional tongue-lashing on Reddit, you know, the usual stuff that we... No, what do you think?
Yeah, why didn't you...
Could this work?
When you were interviewing Seth Rogen, why didn't you pitch
the show? I didn't interview Seth Rogen.
Oh, you didn't? Who
no.
did?
No. Jordan interviewed
Neither
Seth
of us.
Rogen.
Jordan, oh, yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. Oh, would have been nice to interview Seth fucking Rogen and Catherine O'Hara?
That's right,
Catherine O'Hara.
No, yeah. Had no idea about it.
Well,
okay.
The thing is, Boydie, I can't trust you around O'Hara because I just didn't know how you'd behave, whether you'd be able to be professional. Yeah. So I had to give it to Jordan.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, I think it's a very good idea. And you could have lots of cameos of our guest stars playing themselves. Jodie Foster could star in it.
Yes. You know what? We could have like episode 5 would just be called Breeders.
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
and
nice.
It'd be the one
yes.
that everyone talks about.
Yeah.
It'd be like a one-er.
The season,
and it would just ratchet
yeah.
up the tension.
Well, the season finale could be about the debate about fantasy and the Wheel of Time,
yes.
which went on for 25 minutes. And apparently
Longer.
Someone's written an 8-page.
What was your pun, Kay? The wheel pun?
Oh, just that I'd lost the wheel to live.
That's it. And that episode is just called The Wheel to Live. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's me and you having a 24-minute argument about The Wheel to Live.
Yeah, this is gold.
It is gold.
This could be our fortune.
Yeah. Apple, if you're listening,
I think it's
this is a goer.
Come on.
This is a goer.
Yeah.
100%, I believe this.
Stanley Tucci could play both of us, like Robert De Niro in The Alto Knights.
Yes, he could.
Except better.
Who do I get? I want to get someone good. Who would play me?
I don't know. Who would play you?
I don't know. Who do you think?
That's a difficult one. I don't know. I mean, look.
If Condoleezza Rice went into acting,
hey,
it could be her.
That's fair.
That's
you know what? Preference. And there is no higher compliment. Whether you take it as such is a whole other thing. There is no higher compliment. But I think the great Shereyagh Dashlu should play you.
Because
she is the GOAT.
That is his highest compliment.
Right.
I have to say.
Okay,
I mean, she is probably about 50 years older than you.
That doesn't matter. She has range. I think she could do it.
You could CGI her youthful. You do a youthful.
Yeah, you could do a youth thing on Shereyagh Dashlu.
Like Robert De Niro, 100%.
Okay. The fact that Boyd's backed you on this means that I'm not going to be insulted.
Well, however,
No. All I'm backing is the fact that that is the highest compliment from him.
From me.
It's a preposterous suggestion.
No one tells you to fuck off better than Sinead Ashley.
Oh,
and
cool.
That means that you'd have to start swearing again.
Mm.
Yeah, fine. And you know that's the general sentiment with which I treat you both, so fine.
Yeah, so that's fine. So that's good. Okay, right, we've cast that. And you and I, Boydie, will both be played by Stanley Tucci, doing double roles.
It's about Tom Bauer, our parent company, went into filmmaking.
I think so. I mean, look, we're recording this podcast now for YouTube, so the video is going out. Mm. So this could be like a pilot episode of Pilot.
Right.
Like this could be the podcast, and it could be the pilot.
I think the actual show should be more visually ambitious.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So not static cameras, you're thinking a bit of handhelds and dolly.
We'll get Phil Barantini to do the the director.
You are speaking to Philip tomorrow.
Do you know what?
Pitch him the idea.
Do you know what? Breaking news, late breaking news. I'm actually doing it tonight now.
You're doing it tonight?
Yes.
That's even better.
Yeah, tonight. 9 p.m. I'm doing front... This is my evening. Front row 7:15, in which I'm reviewing, among other things, Clueless the musical and the Alto Knights and something else. Then I'm on. Then I've got to go home from the BBC to get back in time to do Phil Barantini at 9 o'clock.
Pitch him the podcast.
In the meantime, the Omaze documentary, which I'm talking Eddings on 8 o'clock on Channel 5.
It's quite the night.
We should say the reason why you are speaking to Phil Barantini is we have an adolescent spoiler special going up on Friday.
Correct.
Which is very, very exciting.
I have to say, I really enjoyed doing that one.
Yeah, it was a really good one. We've recorded our bit. Phil's about to talk to Boyd.
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing. And if you haven't seen Adolescence on Netflix,
I swallowed a tea.
Yeah, you did.
Tea swallowing there, but apologies.
Make sure you're lubricated. Go get ready for your moment with Phil.
With Phil, yeah. Look, we've already kind of transitioned to what we've been watching, and we talked about this on the Adolescence Spoiler Special and indeed on Pilot Plus. But what I've been watching is obviously Adolescence because I didn't watch it when we reviewed it, and I have now watched all four episodes. I mainline them on the weekend. And I mean, it's fantastic.
It's astonishing.
It is incredible television. Mm. It's not what you'd normally think of something I would like. It's not the Wheel of Time. Obviously, it's not the Wheel of Time. I mean, come on, Boydie, don't be ridiculous. But it is an incredible piece of television. Look, I'm not gonna spend another hour talking about it. We did a whole spoiler special on it, but it's incredible because of the way it's acted. It is incredible because of the writing. It's incredible because of the sheer undertaking of how they made it, which is unbelievable. And it is incredible because of the cultural conversation that it has started as well. So I think it's important on so many levels, and everyone is talking about this at the moment. So I kind of think you almost owe it to yourself and the people around you to watch the show. Only four episodes.
And there's crucially, to listen to our spoiler special.
And crucially, to subscribe to Pilot Plus, which you can do so now, either at empire.supportingcast.fm or just through, Apple Podcasts.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Kay.
Always on message.
Very good. Look.
Well, I also watched it because I watched it again.
Again?
In preparation for speaking to the director, Phil Barantini.
The one-upmanship continues between James and
Boyd. No. It's not one-upmanship. But what I would say is that it really bears repeat viewing partly because if you look at the behind-the-scenes, we did mention this on Pilot Plus, behind-the-scenes footage.
Which is amazing.
YouTube and on Netflix. The Netflix about behind-the-scenes documentary footage. And it is amazing to watch. So once you've seen that, it really adds to the whole theme because you're even more slack-jawed at the incredible achievement of it. The fact that you can in your mind's eye, you can see all the cameramen kind of running around.
I want to see that. That's what I want to.
Yeah,
I haven't seen the documentary, but you were talking about how they blend in.
Mm.
The rest of the cast. So yeah. I'm trying to see if I can spot anyone.
Among many incredible achievements of the behind the scenes is that. Yeah, but so and also. There are nuances in the storytelling and that you don't pick up, I think, the first time once you've seen all four episodes together. So it really bears, it really does. For a show that's so, on one level, bleak in the sense it's about a 13-year-old boy who's killed a female schoolmate, and that is horrific, right? But actually, it is, scene for scene, it's incredibly thrilling and entertaining as well, which I think is why it is. Everyone's looking for superlatives, aren't they?
Yeah.
Which I think is like one of the greatest shows of all time.
It's bold,
already.
Boydie, it's lavish.
It's bold, lavish. It's incredible.
It's a joy to watch.
But it's both a joy to watch and incredibly, and has so much to say about what's going on in this country today. So it's those two things. It's spectacularly great as a TV thriller / drama, and it's changing lives.
But it's
because Jack Thorne was on Newsnight the other night with talking about this whole thing with other men, young men talking about toxic masculinity and all of that. Mm. It's on the news. It's become a phenomenon within the space of the 3 weeks or whatever it is since it first arrived.
It's very powerful.
And we say it's not like don't get me wrong. It's not a laugh riot. Like it's kind of bleak, but it's not. It's not an ordeal to watch at all.
No.
It is really compelling and it draws you in. And actually, it's quite hard to stop watching it once you start.
So I think once they start showing in schools and stuff, maybe they have already, I don't know. I think, 13-year-old boys, real, actual young men, are going to sit down and watch it. And they're going to be thrilled by it because it is really incredibly gripping as a show. And I think that's so important. So it's not an earnest, kind of political message type drama. It's just spectacularly thrilling from the start. And I think that's the genius of it for me, is that it's going to, it'll get people thinking while at the same time entertaining them, rightly.
I agree.
Thanks.
So yes, watched Adolescence, but that's not the only thing I watched.
Of course.
That's not the only thing I watched. I watched every episode available to me of Your Friends and Neighbours on Apple. Not all of them, because crucially, they will not give me the final three episodes, and I'm quite cross about it. But
you like to have the whole thing.
Yeah, I like to have the whole thing.
They know you boast too much on here.
I think that's it. That's
maybe
it.
They listen to you boasting about Severance.
Perhaps. Yeah. I mean, as long as they give them to me before they give them to Boyd, we're fine.
Oh,
but, you know, we'll have to see what happens.
I haven't checked how many episodes I've got, yeah, if any.
I think it's six. The other thing I've been watching is Andor. So I've been rewatching Andor.
Yeah.
So I'm now
the original Andor.
Yes.
Yeah,
so I'm now into the Aldara sort of sequence, the sort of the heist sequence of it. Also starring Faye Marseille, who is in Adolescence and listens to this podcast. Big shout out to Faye. But the Andor. I'm not going to relitigate this and go through this again.
Oh, come on, why not?
Except in microcosm, except to say there has never been anything like Andor in the Star Wars universe. It is singular in that universe, and it is incredible television, especially once you get into that second sequence and then into the third sequence. It's marvelous. So I've been enjoying it enormously. There is a problem with me watching Andor, however. Not that it's fabulous, because as I watch it, I cannot wait for season two. But it's very distracting. And do you remember when I was watching Kunk on Earth? I think it was Kunk on Earth. It was a Kunk.
You were painting the ceiling.
And I was painting the ceiling. And one of our listeners thought that was very unprofessional of me, and I deserved to give Kunk my full attention. Mm. So while I was watching Andor, I was undertaking another task. But Andor, it turns out, is very compelling and quite distracting. As a result of that, I was hit in the head by a tree.
What were you doing?
Cutting down a tree.
You were cutting down a tree.
I was cutting down a tree while watching Andor. Yeah.
Okay.
You're very keen on manual labor whilst watching stuff.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
You were cutting down a tree
with a chainsaw.
With a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Do you know what? You're the kind of guy they feature in these like videos about avoiding accidents, where like some clown is up like a ladder and is also spinning a plate and answering a phone and do all the thing. And you watch this doofus fall off the thing and he chops off his own leg with the chainsaw. And you think, who actually does this in real life?
And it turns out
James Hedder.
Could make for quite a funny episode of the
it'd be a weird episode of the podcast. Yeah.
James comes in on a crutches. We're like, what happened?
Severed hand.
Yeah, exactly. I lopped off. This
wait,
is, wrong
is this
time
real? Were you watching on your laptop or a phone?
iPad.
An iPad.
Yeah.
God.
Can I just, and I know this sounds offensive, but I just have to say it. For someone who is A, smart, and also says how smart they are, that's such a dumb thing to do.
I've never said that, but yes.
How dumb.
I mean, it was fairly stupid, yeah.
It could have been so dangerous.
Yeah.
Talk about even more
got hit in the head with a branch. Mm. So,
I mean, to multi-screening, I mean, you're supposed to focus anyway on that. I mean, you've seen it before, so
I should clarify a number of things, because I sense the image you have in your head is not the actual truth of it. So it was a relatively slender, albeit tall tree, so it's not super heavy, and the chainsaw was like a chainsaw attachment on the end of like a pole saw, so it was quite a distance from me. It wasn't like I'm holding a chainsaw.
Frankly, I'm just disturbed by the fact that you've got a chainsaw.
Out of the three of us, who shouldn't... Actually, I think I shouldn't be
definitely shouldn't have a chainsaw.
But second, I mean...
The dire chainsaw massacre.
Yeah.
I don't want to see that.
But again, this is all food for the show that we're going to make, the podcast.
Yes.
It's going to be a standout episode.
Yourself, you just got to take care of yourself, okay? No more of these shenanigans.
And the episode would just be like, tree surgery and or television.
Mm.
No?
Well,
pun too far?
I think we need to work on that.
Okay. But anyway, that's what I've been watching, and or pruning.
Andor
pruning.
Oh, hey!
That was unintentional.
Incredible.
Oh, dear. Well, this is never getting commissioned.
Watching and or pruning, that's the name of the episode. Sorry, Kay, what have you been watching and or pruning?
I have been watching Hacks. I finally finished series 3, and I absolutely loved it. I think it might be my favourite. Have you both watched? I know Boyd has.
Yeah.
No.
I think it might be my favourite season.
Mm, yeah, it's great.
I think it was so good because I really liked how they tackled the topic of ageism in not just in society, but in showbiz as well. And obviously, I talked before about the episode where there was the comedy roast involving Caitlin Olsen, which was great. But actually, I think my favourite episode was when Ava and Deborah get lost in the forest.
Mm.
And it was so emotional and like, this rare vulnerability from Deborah. Mm. She talks about, you know, being aged out of the show business and also, you know, physically she was in pain. So I loved it. I thought it was great. I cannot wait for series 4, which I believe is 11th of
imminent.
April.
Yeah. There's a Christine Hendricks as well character when you're in the golf episode.
Some role play with Ava.
And not annoyingly, I ran out of time to ask her about that when I went into it recently for the podcast. But someone mentioned it, said to me, did you ask her about a brilliant appearance, a brilliant role. But I well, you wanted to, we didn't have time. But yeah, it's Hacks is phenomenal. Yeah, can't wait for the new season.
VG. The other thing I've been watching is Good American Family, which is on Disney Plus, which I can't review, but I've just got to tell you. I mean, the term.
Because you're hosting this, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Come on, you can admit it.
I don't think I can in front of you. But to say, like, Stranger Than Fiction, it is just insane. I particularly can't wait for James to watch it because it's based on a true story, the true story, real case of Natalia Grace. And it stars Ellen Pompeo, Imogen Faith Reed, and Mark Duplass, who was, of course, the brilliant downtrodden producer, Charlie, in this The Morning Show. And it is wackadoodle-doo. You are not going to believe it, James.
Whack-a-doodle-doo. Not just whack-a-doodle.
No, whack-a-doodle-doo.
It's reached the heights of doodle-doo.
Yeah. You couldn't make it up. And each time you think, oh, my gosh, this is so extreme. And then, yeah, there's a rug pull. So I look forward to hearing your
thoughts on it. I look
forward
to that screening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
That I'll be invited to.
That we'll come along to.
Yeah. That you're hosting. Oh, yeah, let's both go.
Yeah. Great. We should all go.
Listen.
We'll ask questions, Boydie, from the audience.
Yeah.
What this question's for Kay.
He says with his arm in a sling. Boydo, what have you been watching?
Well, last night I wanted to mention this, I watched BBC, on BBC One, they had the Richard Dimbleby Lecture, which is an annual event with David Dimbleby, son of Richard. All the Dimbleby family is legendary, you know, current affairs people. And Richard Dimbleby, the late father of David and Jonathan, and this is a tradition where someone gives a long, in-depth speech about a particular topic. And it was Sir Gareth Southgate, the former manager of England, who talked about toxic masculinity and the things that are appertaining to adolescence, so more adolescence chat. But he was really good on it. He was really interesting about how, because he has to do with footballers, young men, you know, in their late teens, early 20s. And what he was just kind of inspiring about it, because you can change the way young men think about women particularly, and you can deal with, but he's like, we have to deal with the manosphere. We talked about the manosphere on the Pilot Plus as well. I don't want to bang on about adolescence again because we've done that already, but it was really interesting. And yes, so, and that's on iPlayer, and I would recommend it to people.
Oh, well, I love Southgate.
Check it out. That was last night. I watched that live on television. It was about 10:40 p.m. Severance finale. We're going to do a spoiler special.
We are.
Next week sometime.
We are going to do a spoiler special.
But I just wanted to say about the Severance finale, which I watched. I'm not going to spoil it or get into it. But you know what I had to do? There's one scene, you know, the one I'm talking about, where there's whispering between two characters.
I saw it so many weeks ago.
That's true.
It's very difficult for me.
That is true. Yeah. Well, let me say this then, because I'm. By the way, I'm describing it in this way to avoid spoilers, because people accuse me of spoilers when I say anything. So two characters who I will not name have a whispery conversation between each other in a key scene in the finale.
Mm.
Of Severance, and I could not understand a fucking word they were saying.
Recreate, you know, if you the whispering do... now. Do the level
so it was
whispering.
Like, hello,
okay.
What was it?
You know, if you press rewind on it, it gives you subtitles for 10 seconds.
James Dyer, that's what I did. No, first of all, I pressed rewind and I got used the subtitles. Then I'm just going to turn the subtitles on. So
upsetting,
which I've never done before. And
you're
so
such a millennial, Boyd.
It really helped though, because it's so I just couldn't hear it. Whether it's the way the sound's mixed, whether my own setup. I mean, they are whispering as well, so you kind of have to by definition.
Do you think part of the problem is that even though you have a 75-inch TV, you have a substandard sound system?
Ooh.
78-inch. Do you know what? As I've said before, I haven't got a sound system, so I just rely on the speakers for the TV. It is a rookie era. I know. I should have a sound bar and all that bullshit.
At the very least.
Do you think you need an ear trumpet like Edith's mum in Alola?
I mean, it's possible. It's possible I'm just going deaf as well as senile.
You can get free tests, by the way. Just let you know.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Severance for Nine. But it is, we'll talk about it fully and what we think of it and et cetera. It's fascinating.
And crucially, you're happy because you got the gift finally from Apple that you've been banging on about.
Yeah. The faux dispensing machine. And the dispensing machine does make a major part, if you remember, having watched it years ago in the finale. There's very, very important dispensing machine activity going on. There's a lot to say. Again,
what does this one dispense then that you've been sent?
Well, among other things, scented candle. Yeah.
To be fair, the scented candle is really, not in a goop way, but it's really, really nice.
Oh, Boydo, I think I might need that.
Well, you might. Well, book, I mean, email Apple then.
I need yours.
Other little things. And what else? Do you remember?
A goat.
A goat, yeah.
A pineapple.
You got
dried fruit and vegetables.
Yeah.
A mug.
Yeah, a mug. Oh, yeah, good mug. A good mug.
Okay.
Yeah, it is one of the great, all-time great.
Okay, Apple, if you're listening and you've got any dregs left, I think I might need the candle, please.
They're not going to just send you these items. It's all part of the whole, it's like a dispensing machine.
I'm dispensing
thing.
It. I'm dispensing right. The other stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, no, I was very pleased with both the finale and the gift.
Oh, I'm glad you got it.
Thanks. White Lotus, of course, we should talk about in Pilot Plus as well. I'm just going over stuff to talk about Pilot Plus, the most recent episode, but if not everyone listens to Pilot Plus, K, that listens to this podcast. So,
but why not, Boydie?
Well, I mean,
why
not?
Don't start him up.
They should.
Yeah, they absolutely should.
But let's just say it's going to be forever known as the Sam Rockwell speech
it
episode.
Is.
Exceptional.
Yes.
I want nothing, my phone from now on needs to be nothing but GIFs of Walton Goggins' reaction shot. That's going to be my reply gift to everything anyone ever says to me.
Yeah. Someone messaged me who does listen to Pilot Plus, because it went out, in fact, today, didn't it? Is it Thursday today?
It did.
Yeah. Saying that no mention that Leslie Bibb and Sam Rockwell are married, which they are, factually correct. They are indeed married. And I think what happened was Sam Rockwell said to Mike White, the creator, writer, is there a part for me? Well, my wife's in this series, what about me? And he went, do you know what? There might be a part for you. And what a fucking part.
What a part, and also what a holiday for them.
Fantastic, lovely holiday. Yeah, they deserve it. They're both great. I can't wait for us to discuss episode 6 coming up next by the time this comes out. And I think that might be it. So, one more thing. Mobland, which we'll be doing, which is heavily embargoed.
It is.
So we will be reviewing in the Next Plus,
on the Next Plus, yes.
It has an extraordinary amount in common with one of the shows we're reviewing today. Which we'll get to later.
I can't possibly guess which one it is.
Can you? Can you guess? But the cast for this thing is fucking off the scale.
Yeah.
Because we knew that Tom Hardy, Helen Mirren, and Pierce Brosnan are the main leads.
This is the Guy Ritchie show, right?
This is the Guy Ritchie show, yeah. Hardy, Mirren, Brosnan to start with. Then you've got Paddy Considine, Joanne Froggatt, Laura Pulver, and then Mandeep Dillon. Very good. She can play you.
Okay.
In the movie. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
And Anson Boone, who's like the young hothead character. It is an extraordinary gaggle of top-level stars. There you go. And I won't say what I thought of it, obviously, because that would be breaking the embargo. But let's just say it could be called The City Is Also Ours.
Very good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are we ready for a listener question?
Certainly are.
Okay, this question comes from Morgan, 1560,
Morgan Freeman.
Yes, indeed. He says, hi, TV pilots. If there was a Nobel Prize specifically for TV creators, who would you nominate to be the first winner? Hugo Blick and Abby Morgan would be high on my list. And then before you answer, he also continues and says, on another note, do you know why SVT, brackets the Swedish public service broadcaster, started showing Protection in early December of last year, over 3 months earlier than it is showed here in the UK?
Presumably it's a co-pro.
Protection seems to have been shown in a lot of places earlier than here.
Yeah, because we had Valerie from our mate from Oz.
Australia, yeah. So it must be a...
But a lot of shows are co-pros these days, aren't they? Yeah. So they need the funding.
Not only that, the co-pros, which then get signed up, snapped up at, you know, kind of at marketplaces, if you like, for TV shows. So it might be snapped up and they go, well, we want to show it when we want to show it. And I also get this feeling that ITV probably meant to show it earlier than they actually have, but for various reasons they've put on various shows. ITV moves around its dramas quite a lot. Sometimes, like, You think your drama's coming up in a couple of weeks' time and it ends up being like 9 months later or finally arrive. I don't really know why they do it, but very, very various reasons. They don't have too many of the similar kind, I think, sometimes. Mm. It's interesting, yeah, that it's been on in all these places. I think it's been on in the States as well, I seem to remember. I may be making that up. We'll see. Anyway, there is one answer to your question.
Oh.
To that listener question, isn't there?
Is there?
I mean, we just said it. It's Jack Thorne. It's got to be. I mean, the man only is he the most prolific, even more prolific than Stephen Knight.
He is more prolific than Stephen Knight, who I interviewed this week.
Oh,
not for this podcast, for the magazine.
Oh, for the magazine,
yeah.
Steady.
Yeah, for another podcast. For a rival podcast. Yeah,
that'd be
another
episode. That's it,
I subbed him for Marina Hyde and I interviewed Stephen Knight.
I can imagine that.
I mean, that would be great.
Two tall men. Yeah, that would be good.
Two people very, very sure of their opinions.
And both equally wrong.
It's got to be the Thorn. I mean, this year alone, there's like three amazing shows.
Toxic Town.
Yeah. Adolescence.
Yep.
And there's something else. I'm sure in it that he's. But anyway, those two alone.
He is very prolific. To be fair,
and they're brilliant. That's what I was going to say. Not only is he prolific, but they're these are brilliant shows that are kind of like world renowned, massive hit shows. Yeah.
Okay, so that is a good shout. Stephen Knight is a good shout, but because I'm biased, I'm going for Bill Lawrence because. Scrubs, Bad Monkey, co-creator of Ted Lasso, and my beloved Shrinking. So that would be my answer.
It's not a bad show. It's not a bad show.
Yeah.
It's difficult because, like, for me, like, David Simon would be up there, but only for The Wire, because I'm not, like, The Deuce and Tremé, I can frankly take or leave. So it really, for me, is just The Wire. Mm. But I think that's such a kind of a magnum opus that I would still put him up there.
Just for one show.
I think you need more than that. Yeah,
I think so.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. I mean, as good as it is.
I mean, it's definitely not going to be Ryan Murphy. I'm going to say that right here, right now.
They've done a special on Ryan Murphy, haven't they?
Have they?
The aforementioned podcast, yeah. Which I quite want to listen to.
I did not know that. I definitely don't.
Yeah, they have done a thing on Ryan Murphy. I'm quite interested to listen to it. I mean, I probably won't, but yeah. It is, because it's fascinating how much, I mean, talk about prolific, how many things he's done and how he works, etc.
So you wouldn't, for example, front Damon Lindelof for this. Not so much for Lost, but I'm thinking The Leftovers and Watchmen specifically.
Those were both brilliant, to be fair. Yeah, I think you've done two.
Lost still has, like, you know, it's still an important show.
It's just the ending of Lost, though.
So here's the thing that I was listening to while I was listening to the official Severance podcast. Like, Jimmy Kimmel was on there, and he was saying that when he did or covered season one of Lost, he spoke to the cast, got friendly with the cast, and I don't know, he didn't specifically name check Damon Lindelof, but he said, oh, do you know how it ends during the first season? They went, yeah, we know how it ends. And he went, but do you really? They said, tell you what we'll do. We will write down how it ends and put it in a manila envelope and just give it to you. And you can just keep it there and not open it. And then you can see. And he said no, because he thought he wouldn't be able to resist opening it. But apparently he did ask them what it would have said, and they told him, and that was genuinely a scene from the final episode.
He shouldn't have said no. They should have locked it in a drawer somewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Would have been the way to go.
That's insane.
But he is saying that he believes that they genuinely knew how it ends. But then in the same way that with Severance, because I think Ben Stiller's talked about this, they know how Severance ends, but how they get there is the bit that they kind of aren't sure about.
I've told this story before, and I'll tell it again.
Tell me, boy. You were in Hawaii, wasn't it?
Yes. And I asked them then whether they knew how it ends, and they said they did know how it ends, is how it's going to end.
Because showrunners famously never lie, so.
No, exactly. But I've always thought that's probably the case, that they knew how it ended, but all kinds of things that happened between season two and season six and the finale, they didn't know. And they came up with loads and loads of stuff just to lengthen the whole process because it's such a hit show.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's fine that they knew the actual last scene, if you like.
And did you speak to Damon Lindelof when you were on?
Yeah, I think it was Damon Lindelof, maybe Colin Cuse, maybe both, I think.
One of my favourite interviews I've done was with Damon Lindelof, and it was an end of complete finish, sort of like wrap-up discussion of the whole of The Leftovers after it had finished. And we were talking about it, and he got disconnected in the middle of a sentence. And I just thought, brilliant. That is the perfect Leftovers interview, that's that he's great. In the middle of talking to me, and he just gets cut off, and that's it.
Wow.
Gone.
You could have done a set visit to Australia to that final season when they went to...
I could have. I went out to New York for the very first season of The Leftovers.
You?
Yeah. And I did. I interviewed the cast there.
Wow.
And we went to, I think it was the... It was the HBO head office, I think it was, and they had members of the Guilty Remnant standing outside, but crucially not smoking, because, you know.
Right, yeah.
But I thought that was really funny.
That's brilliant. Oh, I didn't know that.
How did we get onto this? Showrunners, that's it.
Yeah.
A million years ago, I might have mooted Joss Whedon. I'm not going to now.
No, absolutely not, no. What about your beloved?
Oh, Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
See, I would, because I love Studio 60 and I love The Newsroom, but I am alone.
Marina Hard also went on about Studio 60 on that podcast as well.
Oh, did she?
Yes.
I take it she does
has
not like it.
She has a lot to say about that.
I mean, look, Studio 60 is a very flawed show, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, she's doing a rewatch. She's doing a James Starr
rewatch. She's doing a rewatch of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip.
I think maybe she's just enthralled to you.
Perhaps that is. Because she clearly listens to this podcast and subscribes to Violet Plus.
Yeah.
And this is what has inspired her.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
I don't think she'll be leaving us a review.
I'm going to keep an eye out for it.
Who are you nominating, Kay?
I've already discussed my
That's
Bill
it.
Lawrence.
Her one answer was Bill Lawrence.
Oh, yeah, the one
That's
answer.
It.
Oh, I kind of went for
Is there anyone else we want to mention? No?
No, I think we're done.
Iannucci?
Iannucci, that's a good shout.
I was
shout.
Thinking, yeah.
Yeah, really good shout. Veep?
Yes.
The Thick of It? The Franchise? What was between those? He did that spaceship one.
Oh, dear. Yes.
We
reviewed
that
on this podcast and
it was not great.
Was it Avenue 5?
Avenue 5.
Yeah, it was not good.
It was not the best, to be fair. Yeah. I'm sure there's loads of people like Ricky Gervais. I mean, yeah. The Office.
Jesse Armstrong, Afterlife. Vince Gilligan, you know, David
Jesse
Chase.
Armstrong's right.
David Milch,
well.
pick your person.
Yeah. This is almost like the Mount Rushmore question, isn't it?
It is a bit. Mount Rushmore of showrunners. Yeah. That's a very difficult one to answer. Again, because it gets that, you know, how much do you weight volume? Hmm. Like, if they've done 5 good shows, does that put them on a level with someone who's done 1 great show or not? I don't know.
No.
No, I think it's...
Good pronunciation of great.
Great. Well, like Tony the Tiger.
Yeah, you sound like Tony.
Yeah. One for the kids, that reference.
All right, are we done with the question? Are we finished? 100%. Can we wrap it up?
Like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah,
done.
Okay, fine. Case checked out, so we're going to wrap up the post bag. We are done with this particular question. If you have a listener question, do send them in at Pilot TV Pod on Blue Sky, on Twitter, on Instagram, or indeed over on the subreddit. Shall we have this week's guests?
Yes.
Shall we?
Yes.
Let's do it. Okay, so you'll be hearing about the studio from us a little bit later on. But in the meantime, why not hear about it from the co-creator and star, Seth Rogen, and his co-star, the rather excellent Catherine O'Hara. In this, Rogen plays Matt Renick, the newly promoted head of Continental Pictures, and O'Hara plays the fired former head he replaced. And here they are talking to Jordan King.
It is my pleasure and absolute privilege to welcome to the Pilot TV podcast 2 of the many, many stars of Apple TV Plus's The Studio, Seth Rogen and Catherine O'Hara. How are you both today?
Good. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. Very well. Firstly, congratulations on the show. As a lover of cinema, schadenfreude and the aesthetics of New Hollywood, this was a really hit the trifecta for me.
you were our target audience.
Very good.
It was tailor-made for me. But I wanted to start by asking, you know, this, I believe, is the first time that you guys have worked together, and you are both Canadian comedy royalty at this point. How did that collaboration come about? At what point did you know that you wanted Catherine for the role of Patty, and then for yourself, Catherine, what was it about the show that made you want to be a part of it?
We wanted her from the very beginning. Like, we conceived of the role for her to be the character, and we could not imagine anyone else doing it. And we went to her first, and we had no second option in mind. And so we put a lot of eggs in the Catherine O'Hara basket. Thank God they paid off.
Oh, lucky me.
Yes,
thank
exactly.
You. Thank you. It's amazing. It's so lovely to be thought of. Really.
When they come to you with this basket of Catherine O'Hara shaped eggs, what was it about the pitch that made you go, okay, yeah, I'm in for this?
I don't know, but I'm glad I didn't know that they, if it's true, that they actually had me in mind and had written it with me in mind, because I don't want that kind of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure. Yeah. We didn't say that.
No, not at all.
We were a little blasé about it.
No, you're very cool. Yeah. Kind of off-putting. just had a really fun Zoom with Seth and Evan and, you know, months before, and I don't know, they just made it sound like it was going to be really good without seeing anything on paper. I kind of agreed to do it.
Yes, it's true. We were
which
shocked.
It makes no sense for me.
We couldn't believe it. No.
It makes no sense.
Everyone was like, she'll never agree to do this based on a pitch. And then we pitched and they were like, she's agreed to do it.
I got sucked in. You guys were both so...
We were very persuasive.
Yeah, very persuasive. And you just sounded like you were having so much fun writing it and thinking about it. And you really knew that you knew what you were talking about. You know, wasn't from a distance. Like you've been in it
we were
many
in it.
Years. And you know, yeah, you know this.
We were way too in it.
Yeah, but all like with great sense of humor. It was just really entertaining. This Zoom that you guys presented, and and then the script started coming in and really made me laugh. Like honestly, made me laugh out loud by myself reading. Really, really good. Yeah. So yeah, I'm grateful.
You just said about how you sort of felt straight away that Seth and Evan were really in it. And because of the sort of unique format of the series with these sort of series of oneers that you do in each episode, you kind of do have to be in it. And I imagine have to be in it from way before the cameras start rolling. But for both of you guys, like you've got this strong improvisational background, obviously for yourself, Seth, going all the way back to Freaks and Geeks, and then Catherine, like SCTV, all the Christopher Guest films. I was wondering, like, does having a background in improv, does that make doing something like this easier because you're used to being in the moment, or does it make it harder because you're actually having to try and stick on script for a change?
I would say it's not that you're improvising so much in the moment.
Yep.
Well, you're sticking to the script. Once we get to shooting a scene.
Yeah, in rehearsal, we would tell people to pitch stuff and stuff.
Right,
like
right.
That,
you no, know, you play around, but once you're actually...
We were pretty locked in.
Today, yeah, we were locked in. But then there's... movement, we were free. I mean, your camera operator, oh my God, his Mark, strength and his gift of getting everything on camera, you know, allowed us to have freedom there too. There'd be different movements in it.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And people would say different, every time. You know, I actually think it was very, we specifically went after people that we thought were good improvisers, even though we knew that was not like the specific skill we'd be calling on. It seemed like it would translate well to what we were trying to do, because it also is like, it's really hard what we were trying to do. And I think people who are used to being loose and improvising are used to kind of like handing themselves over to a difficult process, you know? And right. So that was something that we saw in the cast, was like, I think these people will be cool with this and be able to do it, even though I had never done it. I didn't know if I could do it. You know what I mean? Like nothing in my career led me to believe this was a process I would be good at. It just seemed like something that we should try.
And it isn't, I think of improvisation, you first think, oh, people are making up the lines in the moment.
Yeah.
But I think the training, improv training, is what really helps you jump in.
Yes, yeah. You jump. You don't overthink it. Yeah.
No, and you're also never alone.
Yes.
It's all about what you're giving and what you're getting from each other. It's so interactive.
Yeah, very much so.
And you so depend on each other. I think that's where the improv training comes in.
No, definitely.
Just like, jump in, go for it.
Yeah.
Look each other in the eye.
Yes, commit hard, feel all of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like the sort of the apotheosis of that approach is obviously the second episode, The Wanna, which is the Wanna. And, you know, you've got Sarah Polley and you've got Greta Lee in this. And it is just an extraordinary piece of TV to watch. I mean, you talked about the camera operator before. The whip panning in that episode, like, someone must have had a heavy chiropractor bill after that one.
Oh, yeah. Mark, our camera operator, is... he's like the biggest, strongest man you've ever seen in your entire life. And his ability to like learn the scenes and the beats of the scenes and the rhythms of the scenes and take, we would give him such specific notes. We'd be like, hang on her face for like a split second longer. And then when you pan to me, pan a little bit faster and then slowly push in. Don't push in so aggressively. And we'd give him some of these scenes, he'd have like 100 of these things to remember over the course of like an 8-page scene or something. And he would nail it. And sometimes he would miss a thing, and from behind the camera, you just hear him go, "Oh, fuck." and you knew we should just stop right there.
Right. Because he so cares.
Yes. He cared so much. And we would do a take we thought was good. And he would be like, "I was a little late on that cue. I could make it funnier. I could make it punchier. If I pan over a little bit faster, I could catch it a little bit better." And everyone was working to like just make the scenes like as good as they could be.
Yeah, definitely. And especially with an episode like The Wanna, I was wondering what it's like for yourself, Seth, to be, because obviously you are sort of, you've got your fingers in many different pies with this show. You're producing, you're directing, you're also acting. Like, when you're on set then on the day shooting that episode, how do you find that sort of switching positions, or at that point are you ready to just act it because everyone's already set up?
No, I'm like very split focused throughout the filming, and I'm hyper aware of
everything.
The camera's doing, the rhythms of the scenes, and I'm actually like manipulating the timing of the scenes quite a bit from within them. Like, I actually think that the way we shot the show would have been much harder if I wasn't also the actor and director of the scenes, because I could kind of
set the tempo.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, like internally of set the rhythm of the scenes. Exactly. And if something was going too slow, I could make it faster. If something was going too fast, I could slow it down a little bit. And I was doing that all the time. And I would say, I would be like, oh, it takes him too long to pan to me. So I should be like, hey, I should add a word in there. So it cues the thing. You know what I mean? Like, that was constantly happening. And so, no, I was never just like in the scene acting and hoping it was was going to go well. I was doing a million little things to like fudge the timing and the technicality of it into what we needed, basically. Yeah.
I always think the best directors are great manipulators.
I had no idea
we were being manipulated.
No, everyone.
So beautifully.
Olivia Wilde called me out on it. She's like,
really?
I realize you'd have a, like, because when I would always, we would always cut and I'd be like, great, great. And then I'd go to Evan and be like, tell her to do this. And she would like, I noticed you have like a good cop, bad cop thing going.
Oh, yeah.
Which we would sometimes.
Well, yeah, you're in the scene.
You're like the competent version of Matt Remick.
Yes, exactly. The slightly
better. You're the platonic idea of what Matt Remick's trying to be.
I pull it off a little bit better.
But I mean, obviously in that episode and across the course of the series, you've got these amazing cameo appearances. I mean, I feel like when you can start a series by going, okay, we've got Martin Scorsese, Charlize Theron, Steve Buscemi, and this is just episode one, that sets the bar pretty high for your ambitions with the show. I was wondering, what does the cameo casting process look like? Like, do you write into the script, Martin Scorsese cries on Charlize Theron's shoulder? Are you like sending texts to like Dave Franco, like, hey, what are you doing next Thursday? How does that work?
A lot like that, honestly. Like, it's sort of different for everybody based on how well we know these people. Some of them we know very well, some of them we'd never met ever, you know. But yeah, we would write them into the episodes. We really were painting ourselves into a lot of corners because, like, they're very, like, specific roles that the people were filming. And so if they weren't going to do it, we really had very few options as to who could replace a lot of these people because of how narratively intertwined who they were as people was in the episodes themselves, you know what I mean? And yeah, it was really hard. And it was probably one of the more challenging parts of the show was kind of getting these people to commit and scheduling them and making sure the roles were something they were excited by. But yeah, there wasn't like a one approach that suited everybody. It was very different on a person-to-person basis, yeah. It was easier to get Dave Franco than Martin Scorsese.
Well, I can safely say that it definitely paid dividends for both of you and for the show as a whole. And I'm going to have to let you guys go in just a moment. But before I do, I just wanted to say that obviously this is a show that doesn't pull its punches when it comes to satirizing the film industry and the sort of craziness of getting films made. But before I let you go, I also wanted to say that, you know, this is a show that does ultimately still celebrate the very human act of creation and of art and the idea that you can be a bit of a fuck up, but that's a human right to be able to be a bit of a fuck up. But I was just going to say, what is it for you guys that keeps that creative fire going amidst all of the chaos of Hollywood right now? What makes you still get up for work and want to do it after all these years?
I just don't know what else I would do. I'm not good at anything else. I think that's a part of it. As hard as it is to make movies, I think if you love it, it's so much harder to give up on that, you know? And I think that's has been like a prevailing thought in my head is just like, what are you going to do? Stop? Like, you gotta keep going, you know? And that's basically it is like, I have no alternative. I have no backup plan.
It's wonderful, yeah. Thrill seeking, lovely collaborative work. You get to meet and work with fun people and you get to express your ideas and you get inspired every day. And there are worse jobs.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you've done a terrific job with this one and I'm very grateful for your time. Thank you so much, guys.
That was Seth Rogen and Catherine O'Hara. And time now for the news. Now, Kay, since you've already mentioned Bill Lawrence, we should probably say that news broke last week just after we recorded the podcast.
Literally.
And we were all far too lazy to get in and record a bit to drop in, so we didn't. But Ted Lasso will return.
Yes, which is obviously fantastic news. I think, is the focus going to be on the women's team, I believe?
That's definitely part of it, yes.
Well, that's the rumour, but I don't think that wasn't mentioned in the press release, I think, was it?
I don't know if it was mentioned in the press release. It was definitely mentioned in one of the news stories I read that he was coming back to coach the team and he will be focusing partly on the women's team.
But yeah. I don't know if that's been official.
Well, and they've said that Brett Goldstein will be back, but old Jamie Tartt has not signed on to return. Well, certainly not that we know of at this stage. It hasn't been announced. There is conspicuous by itself.
Yeah, I think there will be. It'll be one of those trickle of cast members confirmed, you know.
Hannah Waddingham has signed up. We know Brett's back. And Jeremy Swift, who plays Leslie, which is a relief for all of us.
Yes, that is a relief.
I think they're on, I read in Variety, the Showbiz Bible, that Hannah, for example, is on a retainer, is on like a deal
in case if it was coming back, that they that I don't know if she's confirmed she's actually going to be in it. They haven't confirmed that those characters are actually going to be in it. Is what I'm saying. I'm just saying.
So what official, you are doing, Boydy, is liberally pissing on the chips of our news story.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit. Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Thor, first of all, I'm pleased that the Oscars have announced that Conan O'Brien is going to host the show next year again. That's TV news, by the way. Just it's not film news because the Oscars are televised.
You're very pleased. You may be alone in this.
No, well, I knew this is typical of you. We're still talking about over-opinionated. If you read the reports, he got really good reviews.
Did he?
Yes.
Did he?
Quite rightly, because he's really funny and he was great. Brilliant ad-libbing as well when he needed to. So what's interesting is they've announced it so quickly. It was literally a couple of weeks after he did them. And I think they've done that to kind of like to make people feel comfortable, the fact, oh yeah, he did a really good job and he's coming back and that's great news. So yes, that is the reality of the Conan O'Brien Oscars news, James.
Yeah, there was I didn't watch any of the Oscars because it's deeply tedious. But I there was the bit obviously where he like teases up Billy Crystal comes on. Billy Crystal, greatest Oscar host ever. Billy Crystal comes out. You expect Billy Crystal's going to say, isn't Conan doing a wonderful job? Does he? Does he fuck? Absolutely not. But
what does that mean?
Just
that doesn't mean anything.
Just saying. Speaks volumes in his silence.
That's such bullshit.
God, that's very tabloidy headline. He's gone for the clickbait.
Billy Crystal slams Conan O'Brien.
James knows what's going on in Billy Crystal's mind.
I do. Well, because we're such close personal sneaker friends.
Yes.
I have a bond.
Right. He uses his Billy Crystal ball.
Hey. Yeah. It's true.
Oh, that's good. Very good.
Thanks. Netflix news. So there's going to be a new series called Legends, which is apparently inspired by one of the most remarkable criminal investigations ever conducted. It's a story that follows a group of British customs employees who are sent undercover to infiltrate some of the country's most dangerous criminal drug gangs, which sounds insane. And they've announced the cast, which includes Tom Burke, Steve Coogan, Hayley Squires, Amal Amin, Jasmine Blackborough, Douglas Hodge, Tom Hughes, Johnny Harris, Gerald Kidd, and Charlotte Ritchie. It's a good lineup.
It's a great lineup. I read this, and what most surprised me is Steve Coogan in a way, because it's quite rare for him to do a show where he's just acting. Like he has not involved in the production of it. It's not his production company. He hasn't written it or co-written it or created it or come up with the idea. He's just back to fire. I think that's quite rare. So it must be a good script.
He feels very strongly about Her Majesty's Customs and Excise.
Maybe he does.
Yeah.
It should say, did you say it was written and created by Neil Forsyth?
I did not.
The Gold. He did The Gold. Gold Series 2 coming soon, by the way.
Silver.
But which now, didn't we have a question recently about doing second seasons of shows that are slightly surprising something like that. I mean, this is an example of that because it's based on a true story.
Yeah.
Ended, and now they're doing a whole other 8-episode series.
That's the gold you're
still based
right?
on the true story.
But it's the classic thing, isn't it? When you conceive a standalone series and it's a massive hit and you're like,
yes.
So I know it's called Vigil and that's the name of the submarine, but what if we did it outside the submarine?
Exactly. Yes, exactly. There is breaking news, which has been revealed as we started recording this very podcast today, which is good timing because unlike Ted Lasso, which happened literally after we finished, this has happened during, and because I monitor my emails, not for work reasons, but just in case there's breaking TV news, right?
Because you get bored when I'm banging on about something.
Well, maybe. But this is very exciting news. Friend of the pod, Khadeev Kiwan, the actor, who was most recently in Slow Horses, also in Chewing Gum, Black Mirror, Fleabag, I May Destroy You, This Is Going to Hurt. He is going to be in the new series of Doctor Who. He's set to blast off into the Whoniverse as he joins the Doctor, Shuti Gatwa, and Belinda Chandra, Virada Sethu, that's his new companion, for an intergalactic escapade in the... Oh, I thought there was more detail than that, but there isn't. It's just an episode.
For an intergalactic... escapade.
Yeah. Khadeev said, I feel elated to be joining the rich legacy of actors who have guest starred in Doctor Who. Russell T. Davies and Juno Dawson have outdone themselves with this episode. Oh yeah, Juno Dawson's co-written, I think, in what I can only describe as an intergalactic gargantuan extravaganza.
That is exciting news.
Yeah.
Did we report on this podcast that they're rebooting Prison Break? I feel like we may have done.
I think we did discuss it.
But they have announced some cast for it. So Emily Browning and Lucas Gage are both going to appear in the reboot. So it's a reboot, but it's not like a remake. So it's set in the Prison Breakiverse, whatever it is.
Yes, we did discuss this.
But has entirely different characters.
Yeah, because you said you weren't going to watch it.
I mean, I will watch it. I lied. I'm 100% going to watch it. Possibly hate watch it, but I will watch it.
The best kind of watch.
The best kind of watch. So, yeah. So
While up a ladder?
Possibly while up a ladder, possibly while cleaning some gutters. It's hard to say what DIY I will be undertaking, but yes, something. I will be paying closer attention to the task at hand, though. Yeah. The sex lives of college girls has been cancelled after four seasons. They are shopping it about.
Are they?
To see if someone will pick it up.
I thought it was just after we reviewed it.
Yeah. We've never covered that show. It went under the radar. We reviewed it and bam, cancelled.
Yeah.
The kiss of death.
The kiss of death.
Tragic.
The pilot kiss of death. Monarch Legacy of Monsters has announced filming, announced filming wrapping for the second season. I didn't even know this was still a concern. I'd completely forgotten that still existed.
Yeah, I remember when it was recommissioned. Was slightly surprising, yeah. Because it looks incredibly expensive.
Does look very expensive. It's got, like, Kurt Russell in it. Like, it is an expensive
show. And his son, right?
Yeah, that's right. Wyatt crazy. Russell's in it. Anna Sawai's in it from Shogun.
Yes.
It's one of those shows that I meant to continue with and didn't.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Is it on the sofa list?
It's on the sofa list. It is genuinely on the sofa list, yeah. Absolutely.
It's not even on
synonymous with the dumping
honest.
Ground.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. But anyway, now that they've wrapped on the second season, maybe I should pull my finger out and watch the rest of Monarch.
Yeah, come on, pull your finger out.
You just reminded me of the listeners who pointed out at first they didn't know what pull your finger out meant, and they just reconstruction, yeah.
What, from in different, was it not a phrase in...
I don't think in America it's a thing.
In America?
I believe it is an idiom.
Oh, a UK idiom.
Yes.
All right. For a UK idiot.
Pretty much, yeah.
I've got some new. This is the most. This is possibly one of the least piloty news stories.
Oh God!
Yeah, but
James literally started bracing himself.
Yeah, he did. Is that nothing to worry about? I genuinely am interested and sad about this news, and I'm going to launch a special my own tribute to Joe Coburn. You know who Joe Coburn is?
I suspect you're going to tell us.
No.
Brilliant phrase. She is the host of Politics Live.
Okay.
And has been at the BBC for 28 years as a politics reporter. She did the Daily Politics, and I watch Politics Live religiously. I record it. It's on at 12:15 on BBC Two every day, every weekday. If I'm not in or I'm out and about or whatever, I'll record it and watch it later when I get home. Yes. It's brilliant. And she is, I'm telling you now, the best political presenter on television, because she knows what she's talking about. She has no ego. It's not about her. It's not about her trying to impress people when she's interviewing people. She just asks the questions you want asked of every politicians. She covers stories in a very lucid, clear way. She's absolutely brilliant. She hasn't said why she's leaving or what she's going to do. My guess is she's going to do some kind of podcast, I imagine, like those guys who left Newsnight and ended up doing
the rest
is politics and the news agents. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. So, but she's fantastic. Joe Coburn, yeah. So that's my
Are you devastated?
I'm not devastated. I'll be interested to see who takes over, but I'm sad, yeah, because she's absolutely fantastic.
How many years did you say she'd been doing it for?
Well, she's been doing the rest of she's been doing Politics Live for about 6-7 years, but she's been at the BBC as a reporter since 1997, 28 years. That's almost, I've been at Bauer almost as long as she has been at the BBC, 26 years.
God, what a bombshell to end on.
Oh, we've ended it. Kay's wrapped up news. Yeah. That's it. We're done. We're all finished with news. Kay has called time.
No, sorry. It just seemed like a somber way to, yeah. Okay. No, sorry, James.
I don't mean it's somber. I'm celebrating the fact that she's got whatever she'll be doing next. I'm sure it'll be brilliant.
It'll be fantastic. Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off in your peak, James.
You know what?
Flow.
The other stuff isn't that exciting. There is a Power Rangers Disney Plus show in the works from the Percy Jackson showrunners.
Oh, dear.
I'm not sure Power Rangers really needed to be, you know, rebooted, reworked. Recreated.
Powered up.
All powered up, yes, indeed. Mm. That's the thing that's happening. Aya Cash and Jensen Ackles have signed on to Vought Rising, which is the Boys prequel series, which is in development. So care about that, if you will. And then also, this thing did stick with me. So obviously, The Big Bang Theory was one of these shows where it was massively popular, but has become synonymous with hate watching. Like, there's a big bang lash against that show. And yet there was the Young Sheldon spin-off. Mm. And then there is now going to be a spin-off centered around the Stewart character. You know the Stewart character? So
no, which one's he?
He is, I want to say, the guy who owns the comic shop.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's Stewart.
Right.
But anyway, it's called Stewart Fails to Save the Universe, and it continues the story of Stewart Bloom, oh yes, who was introduced as the socially awkward comic book shop owner during the second season. Great. There must be an audience for this, because obviously the spin-offs have been successful. The original was hugely successful, made massive stars of,
massive,
you know, Kelly Cuoco and Jim Parsons. But also it's slightly hateful. So Who is watching it?
So I always thought that this was that The Big Bang Theory was Chuck Lorre's least offensive sitcom because he's an incredibly prolific creator of sitcoms, isn't he?
Wouldn't be on your Mount Rushmore.
He wouldn't be on my Mount Rushmore, but I do. I know that The Big Bang Theory was very popular among quite smart. You know, it was. I always thought it was kind of the smartest, cleverest of his shows, basically.
Okay.
And you know, I was never a big fan of it, but equally when it was on, I would watch it. And at one point, I seem to remember it was like E4's like massive hit, pretty much their only show. Yeah. So it was gigantically successful in America. So it's kind of no surprise that spin-offs keep going. And Young Sheldon was huge. So I think at one point, it may even still be, people could tell me, if we live in America, like the biggest show on TV in America pretty much as well. So it's no great surprise, yeah. And two and a half men, they started making, which was offensive, the Charlie Sheen comedy. They started doing like 38 episodes a season or something. It was mad, that show, how popular that show was as well. So he is genuinely prolific, but not worthy of either being knighted or getting on Mount Rushmore.
Okay.
Yeah.
That ends news, I think, for us.
On a high.
Kay's like, you know what? You should have fucking ended it when I said so. Fair comment. Right, that is news, and let's move on to this week's reviews, and we'll kick off with the studio, I think, which, as you've heard, takes a comedic insider look at the inner workings of a movie studio. It is Inside Baseball, and it is, at least superficially, a little bit like the franchise, which we liked,
yes.
But the listeners didn't. Although,
very high pitch.
I will say, it's true, yeah. It does have more flair and a sort of less narrow focus. So, Boydie, tell us about the studio.
It's co-created by Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, who create all their stuff together, really, that they work on. And Seth plays Matt Remick. Did you say this in the intro? No, you didn't give much of a plot.
I just said yeah. It's Matt Remick, and yeah. he's the head of the studio.
Sometimes you basically pretty much reveal the entire plot before the review begins. But not
sometimes.
Sometimes.
Not this time.
No. So he's the head of Continental Studios, is the name of the fictional studio.
I did say that.
Thank you. That he's there, love. And it starts with him making it clear that even though he's in the running for this job, the big cheese of the studio, that he is a man of principle, of creative principle, and he is into filmmaking as an art.
Yes.
Not just as a commercial activity. And he kind of has little jibes in the first few minutes of the show at Marvel and Disney and all of the stuff and people using old IP. Well, then, of course, what's funny about the show is he does get the job within the first few minutes to take over as head honcho of the studio. And the first film that he has to deal with, that his boss, played brilliantly by Bryan Cranston, insists that he has to make, is Kool-Aid the movie.
That's a very long
Sorry.
Pause.
Sorry. Well, you can cut it back if
a lot of, that was a big pause. There was a lot of tension there.
I know. I wanted to leave the tension. Kool-Aid the movie. And I think, I'll get on to what I think about the whole show in a minute, but it's such a genius idea. That Kool-Aid is the thing they want to build a movie around. Because, of course, he's drinking the Kool-Aid, to use that phrase, because he's abandoning his principles within seconds of getting the job of head of the studio. And he will prostitute himself, almost quite literally, if not quite, to make the movie about Kool-Aid because he's drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak. So there's the literal Kool-Aid the movie, which is
You know what that is, Boydie? Subtext.
It's subtext. Exactly. Oh, thank you.
That's a joke exclusively for Pilot Plus subscribers. Sorry, I apologise.
Isn't that an incentive to sign up?
I think I said this the other week. I'd like to be in the room, in the writer's room, or in the mind of Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg, where they came up with the idea. Or what should we do is the thing that sums up the terrible...
Let's bite the hand that feeds us.
and also make it Kool-Aid. It's so clever. It's so genius. So, and I think the whole show is... You mentioned the franchise. I really love the franchise, but I think it's partly because I love most shows that go behind the scenes of Hollywood. I mean, going back to the Larry Sanders Show, one of the greatest TV comedies of all time. I mean, Curb does it a lot. In fact, there's an episode of Curb which this reminded me of, because Seth Rogen plays himself in an episode of Curb where Larry is arriving. Filming on the same studio that he's filming on, and Larry is being met by a chauffeur from the airport who's a small woman, and she insists on carrying his luggage. It's too heavy, and he ends up having a physical fight with her. she won't give him his luggage, and Seth Rogen witnesses this and is appalled and turns it into a
viral video. Anyway, that episode could be like a scene in this show because it's brilliantly observed about the madness of Hollywood. All the, you know, the reason why I think I'm so entertained by shows like this and the franchise and indeed Big Town, Small Story, is that what it was called? Small Town, Big Story.
Yes.
The Chris O'Dowd Show, is because how the workings of Hollywood are among the maddest in the world of anything. It is intrinsically bonkers. If you've ever been on set of anything, if you've interviewed these people that we get to interview for this very podcast sometimes, most of them are lovely and everything, but every now and then when you get one who's, you think, oh, this, they're a bit detached from reality. And the stories you get of the making of shows and the madness that goes. And this, I think, I don't want to set it up as a competition. I like this as much, if not more, than I like the franchise, which is a lot. I think this is more of more broad appeal, is what I would say.
I because, do you think it's significantly better than the franchise?
I think the difference is the franchise was very laser-focused on the the particular madness of superhero Marvel DC type stuff, hence the title.
But it also, there, and I, of all people, will identify this, I think there is a smugness about the franchise which doesn't quite exist in the same way here. There's something about this, and I do think it's because, I don't know where, there's a tone of this, and maybe it's just Seth Rogen's general energy, but you're very much on board with him all the way through, and it doesn't feel smug, though it is extremely arch and clever.
Right.
And it's almost like an underdog story, even though he's the studio head.
Yeah.
And just the clever things they do. So the second episode of this is called The One-er, and it's all about Sarah Polley is directing, and she's trying to do this one-er shot, and he keeps fucking it up. But that episode is a one-er from end to end, which is absolute genius. And there's a Chinatown episode, which is like, I mean, how they turn it into a Chinatown episode is wonderful.
Yeah.
And I had this massive grin on my face all the way through it.
Yeah,
it's just so effortlessly clever. And with all these cameos and big stars, Martin Scorsese crying, like all kinds of crazy stuff in it. But it's really funny. It's really clever. It's incredibly insidery. And also it rings very true, which I think, so anyone who is even a passing knowledge in Hollywood as an industry, there's so much in there that's just hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, I personally didn't find the franchise smug. And I thought it was great that it used the first AD character as the way. And I thought he was relatable. And, you know, so I think that's just a massively underrated show.
I liked it. I did like it.
But, I think, but this is, you're right, though. I think he is the key. Seth Goldberg, he's so likable. And you're kind of rooting for him, even though he's given up all his principles within seconds of getting this job. And what he has, and the twists and turns that he has to go through. So he kind of, like, in the first episode, as he kind of, shall we say, doesn't exactly give Martin Scorsese the full truth of what's happening with the Kool-Aid movie. And Martin Scorsese has his own ideas about the Kool-Aid movie. And Scorsese, I mean, again, Scorsese's been in Curb and other shows. Scorsese is brilliant at playing himself.
He's played himself in Entourage as well, I think.
He loves it. He clearly loves it. And he's up for a good time. But It's just all the detail of it is absolutely. You know, I love the fact that the office of Bryan Cranston's character's office is literally the size of a football pitch. It's massive. And people are like, you know, there's about 15 people in there which are just kind of massing to talk about what they're going to do with this fucking Kool-Aid film. And then the studio itself is this weird, like, old school Paramount style, again, lavish building with huge rooms and meeting places. And then when he goes to see Catherine O'Hara, who is the woman whose job he's got, she lived just casually. She lives in this spectacular LA Hollywood Hills
in the hills, like looking out over LA.
Like, no wonder she's fucking pissed off. She's lost her job. She's got this fucking massive house over it, though. And there's nothing. It all goes unsaid. It's just the world of this show. Yeah. It is absolutely hilarious. I think I like it as much as the franchise, to keep banging on it, but it is, I think it's probably flat out funnier than the franchise, even though I love the franchise, and a more broad appeal in general.
But yeah, I think, like I said, I enjoyed the franchise. A lot of people didn't. I think this is a cut above. I think it's
cut above.
Not just the writing, which is outstanding, and the performances, but also just the construction of it and the ambition of it. And I just think it's exceptionally funny. But it's interesting you say about losing his principles. I think it's kind of like, it's not so much that he loses his principles. I think he's just afraid of losing this job as soon as he's got it. And he's slightly cowardly. He's kind of a weak studio head. He just wants to be liked, and he wants artists to appreciate appreciate him as not a suit, not a business, but not a money man, but someone who likes the art because he loves the movies. And there's a whole thing about how he might end up being responsible for the end of film, like, and just like the end of shooting on actual film. And he's just devastated by this idea. And there is, in the Wonder episode, there is a gag that is set up at the beginning of the episode that it takes the entire episode to pay it off. And I was just like, that just that moment really made me laugh, because I was like, it gets to a point where you kind of see it coming, but it's just wonderful when it does. It's a great episode. Kay, did you enjoy it?
I thought it was smart and funny, and I love the cameos, but I didn't love it as much as you guys did. I thought it was great, but for me, it really, like, I think the thing that not saved it, but when I really got into it, was the arrival of Catherine O'Hara's character, Patty, because I think she is really funny. Yeah. Like, it was amusing before then, but I wasn't like, you know, you guys are like, oh my God, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. I wasn't the same. But when she came along, I thought she was fantastic. I think she's got some of the best lines in there. I mean, I've only watched the first episode, but there's a point where he comes round to her, as you say, gorgeous house in the Hollywood Hills, and is having to sweet talk her in something, or almost begging her for forgiveness because she was his mentor, and she feels like rightfully that he has shafted her. And she's like, the proposition he has, which I won't ruin, who's like, that thing should have been smothered in the crib. And I was like, yes, this is funny. She is a funny character. So
there's little details like the running joke about the pronunciation of Steve Buscemi.
Oh, that's amazing.
Buscemi's name, Kate, you'll identify with. just tiny little things like that. That are just like, they're just little observations, little inside jokes, little stuff. The cameos are extraordinary.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't listen to them because I'll be accused of spoiling it. But you can listen if you want.
No, let's leave it as a surprise.
Yeah, but they are.
The only downside of this show for me was the cringe factor,
right?
And there are points where it's quite high. There were a couple of it's where I genuinely had my head in my hands. Yeah. I had to cover my eyes. I couldn't watch it.
You,
it was too
reached for the chainsaw.
Oh yeah, it was brutal. It was brutal.
Oh God, that has to be a running joke.
I had to go and cut down a tree halfway through it just to make myself feel better. It was wild.
Catherine Hahn, we didn't even mention. I'm not sure what her job
She's
is.
Marketing. I have to say, I found her character extremely grating. She is meant to be annoying. That is the point of that character. Yeah. Oh my God.
I mean, she's a one-woman cringe machine, really.
She is.
I think she's fantastic. She's so
funny.
I
mean, we've all met people who like
big time.
That character,
massively, yeah.
I think she's very realistic.
The studio then, which is on Apple TV Plus?
Apple TV Plus, Wednesday, the 26th of March, 2025.
Very good. Next up, we have The City Is Ours on BBC One. Not to be confused with We Own This City, which was the David Simon show. This one rather comes from Stephen Butchard and sees Sean Bean as the aging patriarch of a Liverpool crime family. Kay, was this fucking great?
Oh, no. Do you know what? In my head, I was thinking, he's not going to do it, is he? He won't. But he did.
He did.
It was great, unlike that accent. I really enjoyed this. I think it's, it's a really tense story. So basically, as you said, Sean Bean is the leader of this criminal gang who are importing drugs, and he decides that he wants to cut out the middleman to increase their profits. And suffice to say, it doesn't go well. And he then suspects there's a rat in the gang. And so he tasks his second in command, Michael, played by James Nelson Joyce, to identify who that is. And it is so super tense. I mean, there was a point where I put it on mute because I thought, I can't handle this. But it was very pacey, tense. I thought the characters were well developed. I really enjoyed it a lot. And I think that James Nelson Joyce is so good at playing these characters, these like criminal elements, like wrong-uns. Don't you think? He's terrifying, but also you see another side to him, like unlike in A Thousand Blows. So he was also in that, and he's playing that kind of like intimidating
he's playing
character.
His brother, isn't he? He's Sugar's brother.
Stephen Graham's brother. And in fact, I wondered if they'd filmed this afterwards because he is ripped in this, but maybe that's just how James Nelson
Joyce rolls.
Fair enough. But we also see a more vulnerable side to him as well, because the other thing to mention is that in the background, Michael is he's in a relationship with Diana, played by Hannah Onslow, and it's like a I think they've been together 18 months. It's quite a new relationship, but they're clearly loved up and they want to start a family and stuff like that. So we see that burgeoning relationship as well, which I think is really interesting to watch.
Because, I like that, yeah.
Yeah, because Diana is so different from the wags, the other wags of the criminals, yeah. Right? She stands out because she's quite independent. She's a professional. She's got her own career and, you know, Michael isn't the only thing in her life, right? But she loves him deeply.
She's also clued in that yes. He basically tells her everything. And yeah. That's an unusual relationship
yeah, yeah, yeah.
in these shows.
I really like that. I thought that was such yeah. interesting. Yeah, that trust. Is unusual. The traditional role of the gangster's wife who see no evil, hear no evil, yeah. etc., doesn't get involved. She's absolutely approving
yeah.
of his criminal
He tells
life.
Her all of
yeah.
it. Yeah.
And he's fine. And she's fine with it.
She's fine with it, but she does say, you know, like, this is all great. The trappings are great. I love it. But ultimately, I just love you. So if we lose it...
Yeah.
Because she doesn't want him to go too far.
They established the chemistry between them that they absolutely can't keep their hands off each other. Mm. They're trying to have a baby. The first scene, for a gangster thriller, for the first scene to be a guy arriving in the hospital to give a sample of his sperm is quite a, you know, kind of comedic in a way. And they kind of a little bit play it for laughs because he calls her up so she can help him, so to speak.
I don't think he was joking.
No, but you know, it's quite a funny scene for a. And what I thought was interesting about this show is that it's almost like they're trying to not humanize. And I don't mean make us like the people, though that's probably part of it, because, you know, his character is quite likable in a weird way while being a violent psychopath. but it's almost trying to show you what it really would be like within a gangster family, within a crime family like this. Do you know what I mean? It's like. Mm. We see even though it doesn't always succeed, I think it's trying to avoid the cliches of it. And more than that, it's trying to show you actually, in reality, if you're going out with a gang guy who is second in command in a major criminal drugs importing operation, you would know about it. And you might actually not be bothered about it because you're so in love with them. So it's like, it's making it real. I think it's done a really good job. Sean Bean, in an interview I saw, who is the kind of big boss of the crime family, he said, I can promise fans of crime dramas that this series takes it to another level. Now, those are big words because there are loads of crime dramas. I mean, The Sopranos, people are saying it's the Liverpool Sopranos, the Scouse Sopranos. It's not that good. It's not that amazing. But I think what he means is it's taking the realism, at least, of it to another level. And I think maybe it does.
Because the point is, like gangsters presumably don't sit around being gangsters
right.
all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They
They're not going, we
watch
are the
EastEnders
bad guys.
Or yeah. just like hang out and go yeah. to the pub or play golf as yes. they do in this.
Or give sperm samples.
Yes, and actually I think that is an interesting, you see their sort of inner lives and their yeah. lives outside of the
That's a really good point,
job.
Actually.
Yeah. What is extraordinary is, like, even down to the fact that in this, there's a whole thing about they're importing fentanyl now, right? When we get to review Mobland, which is the Guy Ritchie show that I mentioned earlier, it's extraordinary how much they've got in common, honestly.
But it's the drug of choice at the moment.
It's the drug of choice that they're importing in that show as well. And also, there's a similar thing going on with two rival families, etc. Matriarch, there's a matriarch in that show. But what's really interesting, and we'll get to it when we review it properly, is the difference in tone is incredible. So even though it's really similar subject matter, some characters are almost really similar as well. But what they're trying to do is almost the direct opposite.
Can I guess, is This City Is Us is very realistic and is the other one very heightened? And,
yes.
Yeah.
Pretty much, yeah.
Guy Ritchie.
Yeah, that's not reviewing it, is it? No.
No, not at all.
No.
That was a guess, an educated guess on my part.
Yeah. But you're right.
Embargo police want to come for Boydie, then here he is.
Bring it on. but I agree, Michael Kavanagh has such a striking face. Doesn't the character,
yes.
James Nelson Joyce, sorry.
Yes.
He has such a striking face, doesn't he?
Oh, cheekbones.
He's in Strike. He plays Pez.
Yes. Mm. Yes, that's right, yeah.
Have you ever seen sharper cheekbones?
No. I mean...
Saffron Burrows.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
James has just consulted his file of cheekbones.
The amazing cheekbone file, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got a really good cast. It was Laura Aikman, isn't it? The great Laura Aikman, who was in, of course, Gavin and Stacey,
mm-hmm.
the last couple of specials. Saoirse Monica Jackson.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
These are in, like, supporting roles as well, by the way. You know, but fantastic.
These are the wags.
Yeah, the wags. And they spend a lot of time on the wags, mm-hmm. which I thought was really interesting. Again, making them three-dimensional and real rather than the kind of cliched ideas you might get.
Behind every gangster, there's a great woman.
Yeah, exactly. Julie Graham is Seen Bean's husband. Wife. Seen Bean's wife.
Seen Bean's wife.
Who's also a legend as well. So, yeah, it's very interesting.
I enjoyed this.
It's Sean Bourne.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
That is This City Is Ours. Again, not to be confused with We Own This City, which sounds the same, and I cannot in my head separate the two, but that might just be a me thing. And it comes to BBC One when, Boydie?
Well, it started yesterday, Sunday the 21st of March at 9 o'clock, and I think it'll all be on iPlayer every Sunday for the next... Well, it'll be on iPlayer, and it'll be live on every Sunday, BBC One, 9 o'clock.
Okay. Finally, we have Side Quest, which is a spin-off of Mythic Quest. But instead of taking us back inside the game developer, it branches out to look at how the game affects different people in different ways, with four completely standalone episodes. And I'd say except the first one, because the first one is mainly about the art director from the studio trying and failing to take a holiday. But the others are very, very distinct from that. There's one about a spin-off comic and how it affects people reading that. There's one about that people doing the score for video games. And then there's one where it's a group of friends and they're just playing the game, and it's about their friendships and how it evolves while this game is this anchor that brings them all together. So very distinct flavors, I would say. Boydie, did you get sufficient XP? And is this a side quest worth accepting?
What is XP?
XP, experience. If you play role-playing games, Boydie, you get experience for completing quests and they enable you to level up.
Very well explained, thank you.
Yes.
This is a weird one, isn't it? It's a spin-off. I mean, how big is it must be a bigger show than I realised, Mythic Quest, because this, like the first episode, could be like a mini episode of The White Lotus. It's, you know, it's set in a lavish, okay, he's looking askance at me, like I'm talking about
in
nonsense.
Terms of location.
Yeah, in terms of the look of it, the location of it, it's about a couple, you know, tentatively. There's lots of little, I'm not saying it's literally a White Lotus episode, I'm saying it could be. It's kind of like an offshoot of The White Lotus. He's got this, he wants to, he's being bothered by his boss, Rob McElhenney, who won't leave him alone. He's also thinking about proposing to his girlfriend, his longtime girlfriend, played by the great Anna Conkle. And she's getting annoyed with him because he keeps taking calls from his boss. And Rob McElhenney is being an absolute shit of a boss for not letting his fucking employee have any kind of holiday at all, which then escalates.
It feels like the Pilot TV podcast WhatsApp group.
It's a lot like that.
Very,
yes.
Very similar, yeah. Which, shall we say, escalates to an extraordinary degree. And I'm waiting on Tentooks to hear what Joe thinks, because it starts out quite realistically, I would say, and believable. And then it does escalate and becomes a bit silly, I think, in the last, 10 minutes or so. But it's an interesting concept of a show of a kind of hit comedy with a very specific setting and idea. It's an office set-based comedy, effectively, and having an offshoot, which is different stories each week, rather than an offshoot concentrating on the same characters. So it's kind of like we're doing an Inside Number 9 spin-off of this hit. Apparently, it must be relatively hit, because why would you carry on doing an offshoot of it? So I think the cliche would be, if you like Mythic Quest, you will like this. I in a way, I think I probably enjoyed this more than Mythic Quest.
As did I.
Yeah.
Oh, see, I didn't.
Oh, okay.
I preferred Mythic Quest.
Did you?
Yeah.
And you're not like a Mythic Quest stan or anything, are you?
Unless you become one secretly.
Have you been binging this on the sly?
No, but when we reviewed it, because I liked all the characters, I think, the characters work very well together, and Rob obviously pops in this.
Oh, you like Rob McElhenney from
Wrexham? I do like, yeah, but also just the other characters, I felt like anchored with them, and he's briefly in it, and so you're just with these two characters, which unless you're super invested in, then
I think they're funny. I think Anna Conklin, Derek Walters, who are the couple, he's the character from Mythic Quest.
Yeah.
He's head of graphics, I think.
He's some kind of art director. Yes.
Yeah, so he's got a design. Rob McElhenney's trying to get him to design some hats for the characters in this video game. And I thought they were really funny together. And as I say, to start with, these, for at least first half, I mean, it's only like 35 minute episodes, but for at least for the first half, I thought that's interesting and funny, and does dramatize one of the big problems of the 21st century, which is not
everyone's
be able to have a fucking
on.
Holiday.
Yeah.
Just always connected, guys.
Yeah, it's like you bothering me all the time about where I am, what am I doing?
The amount of times, I should pull the curtain back, the amount of times on the Pilot TV WhatsApp group where we've asked something about a TV show, and boy, we'll be like, I am on holiday, you know.
Yeah. I know. He's on holiday, but he's still crucially doing the podcast. That is true.
You take your mic with you anywhere you go.
When she was a full-time employee, Kay used to literally monitor my every move and would demand a FaceTime chat, if it was in Starbucks.
Well, who else is going to entertain me?
Yeah, no, true. So we've all been there. Let's just say that. We've all had our little side quests.
I like that you're comparing me to Rob's character. Absolutely. I'm
you
that
are.
Monster.
Yes. You are
Iron. Fine, I own it.
So I was entertained, and I thought the lurch into what I am calling silliness, specifically to provoke James and see what he said about today.
It is silly,
but I kind of went along with it. I thought it was a really funny
idea.
But the
Mythic Quest is silly.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah,
but weirdly, I think the first episode isn't really. It's weird to say it's not indicative of the show as a whole because all four episodes are very, very different, and the first episode is the closest to an episode of Mythic Quest, whereas the others
I've only watched the first episode. So you've diligently watched the whole thing?
No, I watched the first one, part of the second one, and the whole of the fourth one.
What?
So I wanted, well, because it's an anthology, I wanted to get a feel for the tonality of the show.
But this is so against your usual way of watching and your, like, analness. You know what I mean? Like, you will never do anything incompletely.
But they're completely standalone.
Good snickering at that. Sorry. Your anal attitude towards watching TV.
Thank you. Yeah.
Right.
And look, I wasn't cutting anything down while I was watching it either. I was literally just watching it.
What a blessed relief.
Yeah.
But I really like the fourth episode. So the fourth episode takes place almost entirely in the game. And it's a group of friends in school, and they're playing the game. And it's, but it's how their friendship group evolves and devolves. While, because this game is what anchors their friendship group, and it's kind of they're talking in the game and they're doing this fight. And I suppose one of the reasons I really liked it is because, as someone who in the past has been a bit of a World of Warcraft addict, it really resonated with me because you've got all of the kind of, I mean, you guys won't know because you've not played these kind of games, but if you have played these MMORPGs,
presumptuous.
Maybe no. You're a massive Warcraft stan. I have no idea.
But it's funny. Kay's more Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, fine. I mean, that's fair. I understand. She's more of an EverQuest kind of person. But So they're in this guild, and one of the characters keeps coming in and goes, "Verily, thou art adventurous," and like she's in character the whole time, and it's so funny because that's like an RP player, and you get that role playing players, and you do get those. So when I first started playing,
would you do that?
I did not do it, but so when I first
you're
started
in a safe
playing,
space, you can admit to anything.
World of Warcraft, I played a female night elf rogue called Silana. Subtlety spec was quite challenging to level that, but I played that on my, and I was in a guild, and my first guild was called the Raven Council. And they all thought I was a girl because I never disabused them of this notion because my character was female. I could tell they thought I was a girl by the way they spoke to me. And I just never,
this
like,
has got,
you know,
White Lotus vibes.
It's a bit like that, but it's actually true. I played that to level 60. And then when the first expansion, the Burning Crusade, came out, Dan Jolin of Empire Magazine, he was like, oh, come and join our server. I was like, fine. So I rolled a new character who was a Blood Elf Mage who later became a Death Knight, but that's a whole other thing. His name was Malachar. And I leveled him with Dan, and we played all the time, and Dan's wife Lucy was in the guild as well, and so we were in this guild there. But crucially, Dan is really into RP, and so we were on this RP server, and I'd never done that before, and it freaked me the fuck out.
Received pronunciation?
No. Role play. It's a role playing server, so you role play your character. Yeah. So literally, you go into here and someone would say, "Greetings, adventurer, what is your name?" And I'd be like, "It's floating above my head, what the fuck is wrong with you?" but generally, and they stay in character, and Dan got quite into this stuff, like he quite liked the being in character stuff, and I found it really disconcerting. So in this episode, I think it's really funny that the one character who's always role-playing, the other's like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, will you just give it a rest?" And it really made me laugh because I'm like, been there. been there. And it's just, it's very, very well observed. Like, did you ever watch The Guild, which was Felicia Day's web series? You can find it on YouTube. It's very well, they released a single, which is fucking hilarious as well. If you've ever played World of Warcraft, The Guild is genius because it's very much based on the game. She was a big Warcraft player.
I've never played World of Warcraft.
They don't name check the game in it, but it's inspired by that, as indeed is this. And I just think it's really funny because I played World of Warcraft for a number of years.
Of course you did.
And I was really into it for a while. So I think it was very cool watching this episode. So I had a lot of fun with it.
I think we're all seeing James a little differently.
Really?
Yeah.
I think we're seeing even more of the same.
Yeah, it's not out of character.
No,
I have not played in years, though.
Mm-hmm. Playing a female character, not letting other people know that he's actually a man.
His Sam Rockwell moment.
It was my Sam Rockwell moment. It's true. I realised I wanted to be the female Night Elf rogue.
No shame.
That was my character.
No, proud.
Yeah.
So you loved episode 4. Well, listen, that's an incentive for everyone to
But the thing is, it's weird that this is an anthology show and it's four episodes and they're unconnected. It feels to me like each of these episodes could easily have just been episodes dropped into Mythic Quest as a series, as some series do, as a departure episode where they do with something completely different. And I think they'd have worked very well. And part of me wondered whether that's what this actually was. And they were like, oh, we've got cold feet, we don't want to, fuck it, let's just do it as a separate series. I have no evidence whatsoever to back that up, other than the theory. But it seems odd that there are only four episodes.
Yeah. If it feels like an extra little treat this way.
It does. So these almost feel like episodes have been excised from the main series. But they're all great. Like I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And because I don't watch Mythic Quest, you know, religiously, like it was useful to me to see things that were, you know, standalone and divorced from the main narrative and characters. So yes, LFG, looking for group, if you're wanting to sign up. It's always going to call it Mythic Quest Side Quest. No, it's just called Side Quest. Side Quest is available on Apple TV Plus from Boydie.
Do you know what?
He's going to find
out. Pull your finger out, Boydie. Come on.
Pull your finger out. While Boydie's looking, shall I talk to you, Kay, about the Lich King expansion to World of Warcraft, which was my era, I think. That's the one that I played it the most, was Wrath of the Lich King. I started raiding there for the first time.
Anyway, Wednesday, the 26th of March, 2025, all four episodes. Only four episodes. Side Quest drop.
Thank you, Boydie. What have we missed this week, Boydie? What have we not covered? Obviously,
Mobland.
Which is on the Sunday.
It is.
And we will be reviewing that on Pilot.
That's the heavily aforementioned by me, Guy Ritchie, star-studded gangster drama.
But it's not the most important thing this week.
No.
It's not the most important thing this week because Bosch Legacy, the third and final season, comes to Prime on
Thursday.
But I did not make us review it on this podcast. And do you know why that is? Because people were banging on the subreddit.
Preposterous.
And they were saying, you know, that and we've made this point before, that to do season three of a show, there's got to be a real reason to do it.
Well, that's what started the whole Wheel of Time debacle.
Yeah, that's true. But the Wheel of Time, we did it on Pilot Plus, and also it's like there wasn't anything that we were missing to do it. No. Sometimes you'll do a multiple season of something because it's a massive show, like The White Lotus.
Yeah.
And sometimes you do it because there's nothing else to do. And sometimes we'll do it just because I want to talk about it. But in this particular case,
you know what? Self-awareness.
Very true. Yeah.
In this case, not self-aware.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about it, but I was like, no. There are other shows we need to cover, so we did.
You're a hero.
I am. Yeah. I am in many ways the hero you deserve.
Yes. Yeah. Do you know what? Funny enough, of course, I am a fan of Bosch as well, so I will be watching Bosch Legacy
when it arrives
on Thursday, the 27th of March, on Prime Video, 2025.
Titus Welliver, who used to listen to Basic Bingers.
Yes. Titus Welliver, my hero, and you've done.
I've done events. My close personal friend Titus Welliver. I have his phone number in my phone.
Wow. I mean, that is impressive.
Titus, leave us a review.
That's right.
Yeah. We could have done series two of this show, actually, that I'm about to say, but we decided to go all new, which is The Change, Le Change.
Yes,
which you've watched, I think, for Eurobattle, which is the Bridget Christie comedy. They're now interested in calling it a comedy drama. I think that's a change. Because when it first launched, it was definitely described as a comedy and was quite broadly funny, as it established, like, she was escaping from her suburban life with her husband, Albert Jalili, and escaping into, like, the countryside of the Forest of Dean and getting in touch with nature and all this, that, and the other. And she's all precipitated by her, by the menopause, basically, isn't it? And she's brilliant. And this looks like an interesting new place for the story to go, because in the opening episode she's faced as a witch trial, basically. She's tried as a witch by the locals, but she's brilliant, and it's a good show. I think that's on Channel 4 Tuesday at 10 p.m. and there's a David Blaine thing on Disney Plus on Monday called David Blaine Do Not Attempt, where he goes around various places.
I shall not attempt.
No. Kind of looking at magics and stuff.
Is he David Blaine? Now, was he looking into my eyes, or was that Uri Geller?
Wasn't that Paul McKenna?
I think it was more Paul McKenna, if anything. Yeah, looking to my eyes. Yeah, okay, I think so, because he's British. But whereas Uri Geller is obviously Israeli and David Blaine's American. But
they can still use those sentences, though, right?
Yeah. Yes, they can. You're right.
Wild Cards, Paramount Plus, Tuesday, which is a procedural, which is already aired in the States.
Yeah. I don't know much about that.
Neither do I.
Oh, okay.
We opted not to do it because it looked like a boring procedural.
Absolutely. And Beyond Paradise is back, which is one of the spin-offs of the Death in Paradise franchise, the Death in Paradise universe. Uh-huh. Dipu. So fans of Beyond Paradise and the Dipu We'll be very excited when that arrives on Friday, the 28th of March, at 8 p.m. on BBC One. Kay, like you.
Don't know why it's tickled me. Yeah. Sorry.
Death in Paradise.
You've broken
it.
Kay.
Yeah. I like it when Boydo gets silly. Sorry. Yeah.
You're a fan of the. You're a follower of the Paradise mainly because you went to. Yeah. You went on set, didn't you? Once to where was it?
To Guadeloupe.
Guadeloupe, James.
Oh, it's not Hawaii, is it?
It isn't.
Well,
but
it's pretty close. It's a tropical paradise.
Yeah. Yeah, and somehow she
available for more exotic set visits, by the way.
But isn't Beyond Paradise is the one set in like Cornwall or something, isn't it? Yeah, so it's less, but yeah,
still beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's about it. Maybe.
Okay. What is our pick of the week?
This City Is Ours. Boom.
The studio.
Definitely the studio. Definitely the studio. Sorry, Kay.
No, don't be sorry to me. Just to apologise to Sean Bean next time you see him.
Sean Bourne.
Sean Bean.
Right, okay. That's it. We're done. We're finished. We're off. Okay. If you'd like to leave us a review, please do so. Kay has something to share in this regard, don't you, Kay?
Yes.
Are we growing ever closer to cake?
Listen, we've had, since you're, I mean, you've been haranguing people. You've been like really going in strong and saying, you know, they have to leave a review.
People have been remiss in their duty of care to this podcast. Yes.
I was trying to be a bit more polite about it, but it turns out you're... Tough love has worked because we've had a flurry of lovely reviews. So I wanted to say thank you to everyone who's taken the time to do that. I particularly found it very amusing when someone described us as consummate professionals.
Wow.
Made me think, were they listening to our podcast?
I was going to say, they're clearly mistaken us for another podcast.
Yeah, but no, we've had some really nice messages. So thank you. Keep on doing that. And also, I've taken an executive decision to combine the Apple podcast, the number from that, which is 1,406, and to add it to our Spotify number of reviews, which is, I believe, 500.
Oh, I've never looked at the Spotify reviews.
Well, listen, let me just give you an accurate number right now. We have 552 reviews. So if you do the maths, James, you'll find that we are inching ever closer to our target.
We are inching closer. So I'm closer to getting cake, yet we are no closer to anywhere near the majority of Pilot TV listeners writing our reviews. You absolute twat. Can you please,
please
and review us? I need the reviews. Everyone who has left a review, love you guys. People who haven't, I'd really appreciate it if you would go and leave us a five-star review. And then I will take back the aforementioned twat word.
Okay, but thank you to everyone who's taken the time to do it so
yes.
far. We do appreciate
we
it.
We do appreciate
it. He's jesting,
it.
Of course, but we do appreciate it.
Is he jesting?
Not really.
No, not really. Please do follow us on social media at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Rivera, at James C. Dyer, and at Pilot TV Pod. Next week, Caitlin Olsen is going to be on the podcast to discuss all things high potential, among other things, with you, Kay. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting. Also, Pulse comes to Netflix. We should be dealing with that, which I believe is the medical drama. The Bondsman comes to Prime. And frankly, there's nothing else on the calendar because
Dying
people haven't updated
sex.
It. I mean, look.
Disney Plus.
I feel attacked, but fine.
That is the, I would say, deliberately provocative title of a new Disney Plus show.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
You're not just propositioning us.
No.
Fine. Okay.
No.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it should be fun.
Yes.
Michelle Williams in it. It's
Michelle
be very
Williams,
fun
yeah. There's Austin as well, which is an Australian comedy starring lots of British people.
Oh, I get to break out the accent. Good stuff.
No, yeah. Please no.
Yeah. Black Snow, which is a show on BBC Two, which is also Australian, I think, a crime drama.
An Antipodean special.
Dreamers on Channel 4, which is a drama about dance.
Look at all these shows that you haven't put in the calendar. This is extraordinary.
I like to attack the calendar every couple of days randomly, or every couple of weeks maybe. I'll put all these on the calendar
Thank
as
you.
Soon as I finish
Do
this.
Do a spring clean.
Very podcast, yeah.
Okay, that is it for this week's show. I am off to offer my services as a TV critic / tree surgeon because I'm branching out.
Terrible.
Pilot out.